Welcome to Boston Confidential, Beantown's true crime podcast. Boston is a great city, but there's more to it than the Freedom Trail and Fenway Park. There's a startling underbelly to the city, and Boston Confidential will take you on a guided tour of the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. My name's Barry McGuire, and I'm your host. I'm a 20-year private investigator on the streets of Boston, and I help run a company called Impact Due Diligence Investigations. If you need anything in terms of investigative services, feel free to contact me at Impact. If I can't help you personally, I'll certainly direct you to the right person or agency. All right, guys, let's get to it. Just a few housekeeping items as we usually do at the outset of each episode. Just want to give you a heads up, a podcast I had recommended previously about the Long Island serial killer case out of Gilgo Beach, Long Island. If you remember, just recently, Rex Huerman was arrested for some of these homicides, you know, as the Gilgo Beach killer. But that podcast has some new episodes. If you're interested in that case at all, this podcast gives you a total primer on it up until, you know, just a few weeks ago, just a week ago, really. And the FBI is looking into him for other homicides, and they're on to a missing woman out of the Carolinas who may have come across this guy. And it's just a fascinating case. It seemed to have been really delayed by police corruption on Long Island. One of the police chiefs out there who was supposed to be investigating this case was beating people, was involved in drugs and sex parties on Long Island, was eventually arrested, indicted, and imprisoned over it. And he wanted the FBI out of this case, out of his hair, basically. And the FBI had to oblige. But when they got a new chief out of New York City, a retired captain or chief of detectives out of NYPD, the FBI was invited back in, and they solved it pretty quickly after that. I know it's been many, many years, and everybody sort of blamed the police chief on that, and I think I'm in that camp. But check out Long Island Serial Killer. So that one's called LISK, guys, L-I-S-K. Check it out. Also, guys, I've got to give you another update on the Karen Reed case. Man, what a hearing on the 15th. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 16th. And it was a bombshell hearing. They were covering several motions. A motion to have Karen Reed's bail reduced or taken away entirely because the dynamics of the case have changed so dramatically. And attorney Iannetti delivered a master class on how to dispute evidence in this motion. Well, several motions, really. It was an all-around horrible day for the Commonwealth. They looked like a bunch of ham and eggers compared to the defense attorneys. The defense attorneys, the whole team was thoroughly prepared. And on the prosecution side, Adam Lally looked like half of the items before him he was just looking at that morning. And quite frankly, that's always the impression I got of district attorneys. And I've worked with some of them. Okay. So I know at the lower levels, district attorneys don't always seem so well prepared. They do, in fact, seem like it's the first time they're viewing the case. But, man, this is some high-level stuff. They knew there'd be court TV was there. There was 1,000 platforms streaming this. WCVB in Boston streamed it live. And I watched mine on court TV, guys. I urge you to go watch this proceeding in its entirety. And everyone on the prosecution side, Adam Lally especially, and this goes up to the judge, just didn't seem totally vested in this case. And the judge, Canone, I think her name is, Beverly Canone, seemed angry with attorney Iannetti, the defense attorney, who laid out, like I said, a masterclass in pointing out deficiencies in evidence. She was very upset. she was very upset with him. I urge you to watch it. She seemed to be upset because he didn't file the proper financial documents and didn't really want to let him testify as to what he had prepared, but she did reluctantly. She was sighing all over the place. I'm assuming if you could see her, her eyes were rolling, but she was quite different to the defense and the prosecution in this case. And I'm just wondering if anybody else had noticed it. It's unfathomable to me. There were a ton of reporters and a ton of spectators at the courthouse. And guys, this went so badly for the Commonwealth. At various points, people in the audience began laughing like this was a comedy show. The first time they laughed, I believe, was when Lally stated that Trooper Proctor had no relationship to the McCabes and Alberts. The courtroom just erupted. They were openly laughing at the prosecution. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like this case. It's crazy to me. This seems to be a movement behind Free Karen Reed. That's what they call the movement, basically. And I guess it's led by Aidan Kearney of Turtle Boy News. His reporting on this has been exemplary yet again. And man, it's hard for me to explain to you. If you're in my national audience or my international audience, go to TB News, right? Just throw that in a Google and familiarize yourself with this case. It's a strange one. This will make a good movie one day. I think, guys, the genesis behind the movement is people kind of feel like, damn, this could happen to me. And then the whole state of Massachusetts is lining up against me because that's what happened. And there's more reasonable doubt that I've seen thus far in any case that I can remember. Honestly, if they take her to trial, it's a sin. They have to. I think they have to in this case because the state police detective Proctor is involved in several, and I mean 4, 5, 6 high-profile homicides in the area, you know? I don't know, like, all of that testimony he has given or will give will be tainted. And, guys, watch this on Court TV. Watch these hearings. The defense attorneys are now openly calling Mass State Police Detective Michael Proctor a corrupt trooper. All over the place, repeatedly, and in open court. So that means there has to be more. Some evidence we haven't seen yet, but everything we have seen was already casting doubt in that direction. So they must have more. And I got to tell you, the judge didn't seem to like it. She didn't seem to like it at all. If you guys want to get a hold of me on the Karen Reed case or any case, really, email's the best way. I've been slacking on the social media platforms. I'm hoping I will snap out of that. But send me an email at Barry@BostonConfidential.net. That's Barry@BostonConfidential.net. And I'll try to get right back with you. All right. So, guys, I got to give you a warning on today's show. It is extremely violent. It has violence against women and it's a host of madness. And if you can't handle this type of episode, you probably haven't listened to much of Boston Confidential, but if you need to bail now, I certainly understand. But this is the case, the horrible, nasty case of Keith Luke out of Brockton, Massachusetts. So guys, this is an evil story on so many levels. Evil does walk among us. And I'm going to have a couple points to make on this guy and some other things, but let me take you back. We got to go back about 14 years, guys, to 2009. I know I'm getting old. Well, that's almost 15 years ago now, right? Holy cow. But it's 2009, and a beautiful young woman by the name of Selma Concalves is living in Brockton, Massachusetts. She had immigrated from Cape Verde there's a big Cape Verde population in Brockton and in the Dorchester neighborhood of Boston as well. But Selma had immigrated after graduating from high school and was working in Brockton. She worked at one of those Zoots cleaners, and she was attempting to learn English. She spoke some English, but was working on it and was preparing to go to college. She had just graduated high school, I don't know, 2 years before in Cape Verde. She had some family already over here and ended up settling in Brockton. Now, Cape Verde is a beautiful island. It's a chain of small islands off, I believe, Senegal in Africa. And it's very tropical, beautiful. There's some tourism. Unfortunately, it's just not a hell of a lot of jobs. And they lose a lot of their population to America and Europe. And the Cape Verdeans I know are just extremely hard workers. They're pretty low-key people. They're family-based. They're church-centric. And in terms of crime statistics, they don't make a tick on crime statistics. They're just workers, really. The problems we have in Brockton, the substantial problems we have in Brockton and in Dorchester, have more to do with American citizens than immigrants from Cape Verde, regardless of their immigration status, guys. So it's January 2009, and Selma is working a lot at the cleaners, trying to get as many hours as she can. She's trying to learn English and set up some college classes, you know, get her high school to get her transcripts, everything Americans go through as well, you know. So she's working on that, but she joins a gym with her best friend, who's also from Cape Verde, and they join Planet Fitness, I believe, close to downtown Brockton. And seems to be going well. They're working out. They're doing their thing. And she's a pretty woman. She's approached by a lot of guys, as her friend was. But at the gym, they run into this big blob of a white guy. He's over 6 feet tall. Looks like about 250 pounds of chewed bubble gum. And that is Keith Luke. And the guy is just a weirdo, right? Whenever you hear of stories about women being harassed at the gym, that's this guy. And an attendant, a worker at the gym who had worked the front desk, one of these days sees Selma, her friend, and this guy, Keith Luke, kind of, you know, jarring back and forth. And Selma and her friend later come up and complain about him. What he had said, he had asked Selma if she had a boyfriend. And she says, yes, I do. I don't know if that was true. She probably had a lot of boyfriends. She was a pretty girl. But she says to him to get him away from him, yes, I do. I do have a boyfriend. He says, do you want another one? That's just a weird reaction. That's kind of aggressive, right? That turns women off. If this guy looked like, you know, Ken from Barbie and Ken, maybe he could pull it off. But looking like spit out chewed bubble gum, Keith Luke certainly couldn't. It made them feel uncomfortable. And I think this happens to women a lot in gyms. And I don't know, they talk to Keith Luke. I don't think they bar him from the gym and all that. But it was kind of weird. And I think that was the second time they encountered Keith. And these two girls are beautiful. They have that cocoa skin that comes from Cape Verde. And dark eyes, dark hair. They're beautiful women. And this guy's just some schlub. And the other thing I wanted to tell you about Planet Fitness, and this will come into play later, the woman, the front desk clerk, I guess, is African American. I guess she was a pretty woman as well. She also had a run-in with Keith Luke. And he's very direct about what he wants. But I mention this woman's race only because it would come into play later in such a dramatic fashion. This guy just reeks of loser, and I'm going to tell you about him, and I guess it's more than that. I guess it's really more than being a loser. So I guess this story really begins at that Planet Fitness, because 2 or 3 days later, man, the world gets turned upside down. So Selma and her friend kind of put this nonsense behind them, right? You have 1,000 interactions like this, I don't know, every month, and probably more if you're an attractive woman. I certainly wouldn't know about that. But, you know, just one of those life's hassles. This guy's an ass, and I had to complain about him, and now I'm on to my life. But 2 or 3 days later, Evil Incarnate would come to Brockton, Massachusetts. So what happened was January 21st, 2009, and a woman who's chosen to remain unidentified, I had heard her listed as Selma's sister and her roommate. And I've come across a name, and I'm not going to divulge it, because in court documents, she prefers to have her name omitted, and she was the victim of a sexual assault, actually more than that. But I'm going to honor those wishes and keep the name secret, I guess. So Selma's roommate is home during the afternoon, and at a certain point, out of nowhere, appears Keith Luke, and he's brought with him, I don't know, an arsenal, a gun, you know, zip ties, knives, and all kinds of stuff. So he gets into the apartment pretty quickly, and he rapes Selma Concalves's roommate. And it's horrible. But during the time frame where he's raping her, again, in Massachusetts, they don't really specify what type of rape it is. In Massachusetts, the standard is any penetration of any orifice by anything is rape, you know, if it's not consensual. And that's all they listed it as. So could it be oral? Could it be vaginal? We really don't know. And does it really matter? I'm not entirely sure, but he rapes her, he's brutalizing her, and he's used his fist on her. And this guy is above 6 feet tall, and I told you, just a blob, basic blob of crap. But as the rape is going on, Selma comes home and comes into the apartment and is almost immediately shot in the head. And at this point, he turns the gun on Selma's roommate and fires 2 or 3 times. And the roommate grabs her large teddy bear and just grabs it and braces for the end. This woman had done nothing to anyone. And she grabs her teddy bear as she is being shot in the body and in the head. She feigns death, guys. And now, in these moments, Keith Luke has committed a double homicide. Can you imagine that? He's handcuffed Selma Concalves' roommate, and he had brutalized. She's still in handcuffs, and she hears Selma being murdered, and this loser takes off. And at this point, I think this is a triple decker in Brockton. Selma's roommate breaks her own arm in getting out of the apartment. I don't know if she goes out a window or a door. During this time frame, the upstairs neighbor, who was friends with Selma, heard the gunshots, obviously, and looks out the window. And she sees Selma out there, handcuffed, and she had been raped. I hate to keep saying that. And she was, her clothing was at least disheveled and, you know, pulled aside and all this. And it was a horror show. And almost simultaneously, this guy, Keith Luke, gets in his Ford Ecoline van that his mommy had bought him and or starts to go towards it. And then they hear more gunshots. He killed another person. That's 3 people just after exiting the apartment building. This guy, Keith Luke, shoots Arlito Concalves. He was a homeless guy, local guy, and he was pushing his carriage, you know, as homeless people do. He was 72 years old. And he probably looked, I don't know, 85. You know how it is, life on the street. And he shoots this guy right in the head and in the neck area. It severed his carotid artery, but it surprised him so much, he got blown backwards and cracked his head. And they say that may have been a fatal wound of in itself if he hadn't been shot in the neck, you know? So it was just a nightmare. It was a bloodbath. And I don't know, 30, 45 seconds. So now Keith Luke continues on. He's on a rampage. And the Brockton police get activated. The upstairs neighbor, I believe, is the first one to activate EMS. And she called the Brockton police. And they were right in the area. So they were kind of right on this whole situation. And they had a good description of the vehicle because the woman was still right there. And Keith Luke takes off, but the Brockton police are pretty soon on his ass. He gets into a running gun battle with the Brockton Police Department. They're exchanging shots. The Brockton police don't know what's going on. They don't know where this is coming from, you know, and he's left a trail of bodies. They didn't really know that yet because all they knew is this guy was on the run for some reason. And now he was shooting at them. So that's the immediate threat, and they were looking to shut that down. And this goes on multiple locations. Brockton police do an excellent job. You have to give credit where credit's due. They box the guy in. They return fire. This was a, you know, gunfight at the OK Corral, I think. And at some point, Keith Luke apparently runs out of ammunition. Later, he'd say his plan was to save one bullet for himself. But all these lunatics say that and really do it. And he did it as well. So he gets arrested and he later, guys, he apologizes on video for shooting at the police because they were white, but takes responsibility for those three homicides. Selma Concalves and her roommate are Liado Concalves. And there's no relation there, guys. It's a strangest coincidence. Both Arlindo and Selma Concalves, same last name and no relation. I think it's a common name in Cape Verde and in Portugal, for that matter. But yeah, there's no relation. He was just a homeless guy who happened to be walking by, doing no one any harm. And this guy just shoots him like right in the neck. He's dead before he hits the ground for no reason. You know, life wasn't bad enough for that guy. He's going to run into this maniac, Keith Luke. And as you can tell, guys, there's more to this story than this involuntary, celibate, fat loser, Keith Luke. He wasn't just angry about that. He says after he got caught, he has this shootout with the cops. And somehow this coward ends up unhurt, right? If you were so tough, how come you weren't tougher with the police? Because they were going to put your ass down. So he gives it up, gets pinched, but he confesses. And his confession is just vile because he's an avowed white supremacist. But there's more to even that in this story. It comes out later that he's a full-blown schizophrenic. And that would become even more apparent in just the next few years with this guy, Keith Luke. But he was gone and he confessed, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He said he killed Selma Concalves, her roommate, and Arlindo because they had brown skin. He didn't like their race, but he was actually trying to pick Selma up at the gym, if you remember. So I don't even know if I believe that. I think this guy's just a scatterbrain nut job. He was diagnosed, guys, at about age 15, 16 as being schizophrenic. He had taken his own medication with his own urine, but now he's this big white supremacist. And I know a lot of schizophrenia can be controlled to medication. And his mother would later come to the stand for these horrific crimes, you know. It's first degree homicide times three, like armed home invasion, So the charges are just, you know, it's life in prison without parole. That's all we have in Massachusetts. But it's the most serious crimes on the books. And he says that he killed them because they had brown skin. But he was kind of sweet on Selma to try to ask her to be his girlfriend. And then he tries to do the same thing to Sade Fentis, who was the clerk, the African-American clerk at Planet Fitness. She was attractive as well. And he just has this weird vibe about him. But the last girl's out. I think he's trying to get through in numbers, you know, what he doesn't have in looks. And everybody's repulsed by him. And that's the vibe he gives off. Nobody knew he was this crazy. But he seems to be one of those involuntary celibate people. But he's only 22 years old. So I don't know. He's diagnosed as schizophrenic at age 15. He does some crazy stuff, according to his mother. And I believe her. She's kind of a victim in this as well. But he would put a cross in his bedroom with concrete blocks. He'd put them in a crucifix style and sleep on that. He was given all this medication for schizophrenia, which he'd consume with his own urine instead of a glass of water, guys. And there was no father in the home. And I think by his late teens, this guy, Keith Luke, was a big hulking maniac who his mother really didn't have control of. During the trial, she relays an instance where he was about to kill her, you know, goes vacant in the eyes and all that. It was over some nonsensical, he didn't like the shirt she was wearing, that type of deal. But he was just out there, but she knew it. And that's one of the consequences of having a fatherless home, right? You needed somebody about his size who's going to fight back and say, no, you've got to be committed. He was committed repeatedly, guys, to Tewksbury State Hospital, to Taunton State Hospital, and I think another one on the North Shore, all for, you know, pretty extended stays. He did have schizophrenia, and I don't think it gets any worse than that. But I know a lot of people who have it, if you take medication, it works wonders and you're a functioning member of society and life is, you know, pretty good, you know, next to normal anyways. But you have to take that medication and this guy wouldn't do it. So one of the things that makes this so difficult to say he wasn't really an ardent white supremacist, like, I don't know, the Aryan Brotherhood or whatever it is, right? And there are people like that. I fully admit that. I think this guy, Keith Luke, was just a jamoke with schizophrenia. But he does show up, guys, at a hearing. And he had carved a full swastika with a small staple right in the middle of his forehead. I'll put a picture in the show notes, guys. He's obviously just out there. And he does end up pleading insanity. And I think he gets closer to it than most. But the Commonwealth psychiatrists say he knew right from wrong. He was fit to stand trial as a sane defendant, and he did. But, you know, it's hard to say he's not an ardent white supremacist when he defaces himself like that. But you know what I mean? I think he walks that line of just being a nut. He's a total nutter. Definitely needs to be in prison. And there's probably a case for putting this guy's ass in the electric chair. If it wasn't for the schizophrenia, right? That's what I'd say should be done with him. And maybe even with the schizophrenia. It's always been my policy is, yeah, I care about your mental illness all the way up until you start hurting other people. And then my well of sympathy is with them, you dig? He got pretty sane once he faced the police, right? There's something to be said for that. He sobered up pretty quickly for that, and he gave up the ghost. Cops were there to do battle with him, and he decided, you know, that's it. I'm going to give it up. Strange, strange case this is. So the only really good thing to come out of the trial is his mother. I know you got to kind of take some of this testimony with a grain of salt because she's so close to her son and wants what's best for him. But She seemed to describe a fatherless household where this kid was, you know, as good as gold up to the age 7 or 8. And then he started the typical herding pets and the psychopathy of, you know, lighting fires and stuff like that. Just the beginnings of a serial killer. And that's what we have here. I guess you'd probably call this guy a spree killer, right? Because this happened once, but he had a whole plan. And I remember reading he had more ammunition. I don't know if the cops were just ramming the hell out of him or what, but he didn't get to the other ammunition, and he had quite an arsenal with him, knives, everything. And he was pretty brutal to Selma Concalves' roommate, right? And just very brutal, and he smelled. That's one thing every witness had in common, right? From the cops arresting him to Selma's roommate. They all said this guy just stunk. They didn't know if he was on drugs or whatever else. At one point, Keith Luke had Selma's roommate wipe like white powder from the sides of his mouth. He's just an animal, you know what I mean? And he said he didn't want to die a virgin, and he did say a lot of vile, racist crap in his confession. So maybe he did harbor that deep-seated hate of a racist. Maybe it was just mixed with the craziness of schizophrenia. But whatever it was, man, on January 21st, 2009, it all just collided. And all these people, you know, and Brockton's a tough town. They see a lot of crime. But even for Brockton, you know, it's like an episode out of CSI, a shootout with the police. I didn't tell you that Selma's roommate survived. She was shot several times in the upper body, in the head and neck area. And I told you she just kind of braced for it, but she played dead by hugging that teddy bear. And she survived. And she lived to testify against this scumbag. And he pleaded insanity. But, you know, after the Commonwealth's experts and whatever experts they pay for on the defense determine you're fit to stand trial, it's over, because he confessed. And he had a strange conversation with his mother, but I'm telling you, he says he doesn't regret it, and he's just an absolute animal. He has to be confined. I would know of no state hospital that would be secure enough to house this animal, so you'd have to put him in some wing of a prison, even if he was determined to be fully schizophrenic, right? He's a killer. His mother would go on to say during the sympathy phase of the trial that Keith would have an addiction to pornography. She'd find, you know, CDs around, just like hardcore, crazy pornography. And almost like he was autistic, didn't really pick up on social cues, you know what I mean? He doesn't know you don't talk to a lady like that, a woman like that, at the gym, ask her if she wants a boyfriend. So he's this ardent racist who's tried to pick up an African-American and a Cape Verdean in the same week. I think he was just a nut. But I guess this case was only going to end one way with this guy Keith Luke dead. He was 22 when he did this, and he committed suicide, guys, May of 2014 in prison. And the only good thing is, I guess his organs were harvested and sent to needy patients, hopefully worldwide, right? So this guy had been confirmed as schizophrenic, I guess, in his teens, in his 20s. Never really did anything with his life. It was said that his grandparents were a support system for him and the mother growing up. There's no mention of a father. That can't be good on the psychology of a kid. And when the mom's parents died, Keith's grandparents, when they passed away, they moved into their house, and there was a bit of an inheritance. And the mother, trying to jostle Keith out of his, you know, ever-present depression, bought him that van. But, you know, why would a 22-year-old kid want a goofy van like that when he could get something decent because it was relatively new. I was just wondering if, you know, I know he planned this attack, but did he plan others? And I'm sure the state police looked at him. Could this kid have done this previously? But it seems to be a one-of, a true spree killer. Does he hate brown people? I guess so. He says he does. And he's also schizophrenic. When you say you're crazy, right, that's schizophrenia. That's what most people mean. It's kind of a derogatory term now, right? But schizophrenia is probably the worst of the worst. They're the people you hear when they say, I hear voices. And I was always taught during any training I had was that people who hear voices are compelled to obey those voices. So there's some of the most dangerous people in the world. There's no reports of Keith actually hearing voices. I think if he had experienced that, it would have been in the court record. He was just basically, yeah, right, I did it and I don't give a shit. He was laughing about it. His demeanor in court demonstrated to me that, yes, this guy is probably schizophrenic. He was literally laughing in witnesses' faces. And just the family of the Concalvezes and the roommate, man, he was just cracking up laughing. He'd be admonished. He just doesn't give a shit. And then he carved that swastika in his forehead. That's a big F you to the entire world, you know? It makes you just so angry. You say, plop his ass in the electric chair, but he is truly mentally ill. You know, not mentally ill enough to not be held responsible for your actions, but just a garden variety nutter, you know? And I bet if they force him to take medication in prison, half that craziness clears up. It's too late now. The guy's an atom bomb, right? But guess you don't have to worry about him anymore. So he's gone as of 2014. Just a sad, sad story of Keith Luke. Seems to have been a bad machine from Jump Street. Totally normal all the way up to 7 or 8. And then, you know, in love with horror films, all kinds of gore and whatever he was doing. Just really the stereotypical psychopath path through near adolescence, I guess, right? Crazy. And here it is in tragedy. Those three people, Selma, Alindo, and that victim of rape whose arm was broken, who was shot multiple times, handcuffed and raped by this guy. You know, it's just amazing to me that the Brockton police didn't put him down, but they didn't know any of this. All they knew is they had a guy in a van. As soon as they try to pull him over, he starts blasting. It was said he had a revolver. I don't know if he had another pistol or what. He had several other knives, zip ties, that type of stuff. So I don't know if he was able to, like, reload. He's definitely not used to any type of confrontation with firearms, I don't think. And it may have caught him off guard. And it may have sobered his ass up pretty quick because he wasn't so brave then. When this Brockton cop's pointing 40 millimeters at you, right? All this guy's white supremacist nonsense is just that. I hope people don't really take that type of stuff, you know, to account. This guy was a schizophrenic. That's what really happened here. Just a total loon, you know, but I know it gives off that vibe. He's just a nasty, nasty person. But he didn't seem to be involved in any of those national, I hate whomever it is. And with the swastika, I never really understood that, right? Because wasn't it Hitler's dream to bomb New York City in, you know, America? But this guy thinks he'd be friends with him, right? Because he doesn't like brown people. It's just even a strange connection. But I guess that's what happens when you have schizophrenia, right? You know what I was thinking on this case is I remember when he killed himself in 2014, right? But if he hadn't killed himself, we would have owned him for what? Maybe another 60 years we would have had to pay for his lousy ass in prison. You know, at about the time of his suicide, it came out that he had tried a few more times, and I guess he was just persistent in it. And I don't know if they were ever able to fully medicate him. I don't know what his story was on the inside, right? But to be honest with you, I really don't care. The world's a better place without Keith Luke, that's for sure. And there was a strange phone call during, you know, the first visit with Keith and his mother. And it was kind of odd. People said that the connection they had. And it was at that time Keith said he wasn't sorry for what he did. So the case was over right then and there. But to see this ass with that swastika, it's like, man, you want to put him right in the electric chair. But he's a nut job, right? He's got diminished capacity. And we're supposed to be a civilized people. But if he doesn't deserve capital punishment, it's a pretty close call, right? So I think the diagnosis of schizophrenia came in 2002 when Keith Luke was 15. By 2008, that's when he tried to kill his mother. So there was a path here. Mom did know that this guy needed services, and he's a big dude, and I think he was violent with Mom, as the time he tried to kill her indicates. But he was just on his own. There was no guy around to keep him in line. And that's one of the things that happens with a fatherless household. But it just seems to follow that trajectory of psychopathy, right? Where he has an addiction to pornography. He gets angry when women won't be with him, where he can't get a girlfriend. And it builds up to this crazy pitch until he asks Selma the first time he meets her, "Can I be your boyfriend?" All this off-the-wall behavior. And he'd been hospitalized many times. You can kind of see this coming a little bit here, no? He needed more help, but I guess our mental health system's for crap, because this guy would go there for weeks on end. It was expensive treatment, and the guy deserved it. He's a loon. But does Mom not see an escalation here, or can she just not control it? I think it's the latter, and that's how this all happened, and it boils up. He must have followed Selma home one night after the gym, because he obviously knew where she lived. And he thought she was home. That's who he was going there. He was going there for Selma. And her roommate was there first, and then Selma, and then Arlindo, who was just walking by. All victims of this psychopath walking down the street. All right, guys, that's a sad one. I think I'm going to leave you there. If you need me, reach out via email. That's the best platform, barry@bostonconfidential.net. And that ends the story of Mr. Keith Luke. All right, guys, I'll be on to the next one. I'll see you on the flip side.